afternoon, and welcome to The Rundown from WUFT News, exploring our community from top to bottom. I'm Kristen Moorhead. Alachua County Public Schools and public schools across the state have recently been seeing a drop in enrollment rates. In Alachua County, around 800 fewer students are enrolled than the previous year. ACPS spokesperson Jackie Johnson says there's a couple of reasons for this, but it's still causing concern among parents and staff in the area who are wondering what this may mean for their children and schools. WUFT reporter Kira Carl has been looking into the issue, and host Dana Hill asked her to explain.
Kara, let's start with the basics. Why exactly are enrollment rates dropping in Alachua County?
So, Dana, there are two major reasons why Alachua County is seeing that drop in enrollment. First off, there's just been an overall drop in the birth rates, so less kids getting enrolled in kindergarten. And secondly, the Florida Empowerment Scholarship. I spoke with Jackie Johnson on what exactly that scholarship is. Let's hear from her now.
Really, the biggest factor that's hitting school districts across the state of Florida is the massive expansion of the Florida Empowerment Scholarship Program, which is essentially vouchers, which provides money for families to send their children to private school, but it also gives them a lump sum payment spread out, I think, over four payments if they decide to homeschool their children.
Essentially, parents who never even had their children enrolled in public schools are using it, which is contributing to that drop.
So what does this mean for teachers and staff?
Luckily, in Alachua County, it doesn't look like this drop is going to cause too much direct harm for the current teachers or staff. ACPS did hire around 50 fewer teachers than it normally does, but this isn't just a problem for ACPS. It's a statewide issue. According to PRX, Central Florida schools are also seeing steep enrollment declines. The Florida Education Association is even concerned about school closures. What this does mean for ACPS is a drop in funding, because funding is based on how many students are enrolled. So this drop will change some financial planning.
Well, so how is this going to affect students then?
Thankfully, students won't see much of a change for this school year. Johnson says not letting budget cuts affect the classroom is something that the ACPS prides itself on.
Fortunately, we haven't had to really affect the classroom with any budget provisions that we've had to make because of fewer dollars coming in from the state. So right now, we don't anticipate that students or teacher or students or families will see really any significant changes in the quality of education their students are receiving. So we feel very good about that.
What Johnson did stress is the importance of enrolling kids in public schools as early as possible. This is what gives the ACPS a headcount into how many students they'll actually wind up having and ensures that enrollment will stay steady.
Kira, I should ask, just based on what we're seeing in the news, does any of this have to do with recent ICE agreements with schools?
That's a great question. I asked Jackie Johnson about that, and she gave me a firm no, that ICE agreements have nothing to do with these dropping enrollment rates.
That was WUFT's Kira Carl and Dana Hill talking about dropping enrollment rates in Alachua County and across the state. Do you have a story idea for The Rundown? We want to hear from you. Email us at therundown@wuft.org. And if you want to listen to previous episodes, visit wuft.org/therundown or find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or Amazon. Coming up after the show on Here and Now, gold prices reached $4,000 an ounce for the first time, and investors are warning the U.S. economy could be heading into a major recession. But first, Gainesville's Evergreen Cemetery is home to thousands of graves over nearly 60 acres and one woman who's made it her mission to document them all. WUFT's Sarah James Ranta takes us there to meet the cemetery's caretaker who spent years digitally preserving the past.
In the spring air, cicadas buzz like static, broken only by the sharp call of a bird. But this isn't just a casual walk along a dirt road. There are 14,000 people beneath my feet. This is Gainesville's Evergreen Cemetery, where twisted oak trees loom overhead, their branches draped in heavy Spanish moss. And while it holds the past, one woman is mapping its future, digitizing 169 years of history, one grave at a time.
I'm Karen Press. I'm the cemetery coordinator at Evergreen Cemetery. I joined in 2018. Right after I started with the cemetery, I started digitizing the records.
She's digitized the gravesite's 29,000 plots by hand, using Rolodexes, ledger books, maps, and lot diagrams, and taking a photo of every headstone.
56 acres, you can't see from one end to the other of the cemetery, so having an app to show you where your loved one is at is really helpful.
Yeah.
So people seem really happy, but mostly I think they're impressed with how fast it works and that it's got arrows to show them what direction to go.
Despite what you might expect of a cemetery caretaker, Karen Pruss is bubbly. Her wavy strands and shades of gray blow in the breeze.
For me out here, well, I walk around and I talk to everybody. Even when I'm by myself, I'll see somebody and I'll go, oh, you were born on my birthday. Happy birthday. Yeah.
And sometimes, she says, the cemetery speaks back.
I was trying to locate a particular grave and I could not locate it. The records weren't good. I was looking for this. And I was walking. I was at a fast clip in high heels. And I tripped and I just face planted. And I'm like, golly, what in the heck did I trip over? And it was that person had a temporary stake, like a little metal stake like this. Then my heel snagged on it and threw me down. And it was the woman I was looking for. And I'm like, Nancy, there you are. Okay, you grabbed me on the way by.
Cemetery work wasn't what Karen Pruss imagined herself doing, but it's become something far more meaningful. Through years of quiet, careful work, she's developed a deeper love for history, for legacy, and for Gainesville itself.
I have to tell you, of all the jobs I've had, all of them, this is my very favorite. I love this cemetery, I love what I do, and my husband, he didn't understand. He would come home. I would come home and I'm just like 9 miles an hour about the cemetery. He's like, oh my God, it's just the cemetery, right? And then he came out and helped me do a couple of funerals, and we were short-staffed, and he came and helped me. And he's like, now I get it. He goes, I see where, he goes, what you do, you help families on their very worst moment. They're laying somebody to rest and they're saying goodbye. And he goes, and you're there to support them. He goes, it doesn't get better than that. So, it's true. It just doesn't get any better.
100 years from now, Karen Pruss hopes someone will be walking these same grounds, preserving stories, honoring the past, and loving history just as much as she does. For WUFT News, I'm Sarah James Ranta.
You can find this and other stories by Sarah James Ranta at our website, WUFT.org. If you're just joining us, this is The Rundown from WUFT News, exploring our community from top to bottom. I'm Kristen Moorhead. Coming up on the show, I spoke with WLRN reporter Daniel Rivero on his new book about Florida's journey to grant people with felony convictions the right to vote and the controversy that followed. That's after a short break.
The UF College of the Arts proudly presents Spotlight on Rent, a homecoming weekend fundraiser at UF's Nadine McGuire Pavilion, Sunday, October 19th at noon. The event kicks off with a VIP reception and conversation with the creative team, followed by the musical Rent, then post-show desserts and meet and greet with the cast and crew. All proceeds support the School of Theater and Dance. Tickets at arts.ufl.edu/spotlight.
Get the local news that matters in your life. All you have to do is check your email. Join thousands of Florida subscribers who receive The Point. The Point is a roundup of important news happening near you. It's free and supported by Sweetwater Branch Inn Lodging and Events. The Point arrives in your email inbox at 8 a.m., briefing you on the most important state and regional news. Head over to our website at wuft.org/thepoint. That's wuft.org/thepoint.
Israel and Hamas agreed to the first phase of a ceasefire deal. It could go into effect as soon as Friday. We'll follow the developments tomorrow on Morning Edition from NPR News.
Weekdays at 5 a.m. on WUFT 89.1, 90.1.
Hi, I'm Bill Curtis, scorekeeper of NPR's Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me on WUFT. The 13th Annual Wine to Water West Skiles Water Stewardship Awards, sponsored by the Rotary Club of Downtown Gainesville, will be October 24th at 6 p.m. at the Cade Museum. The event will recognize 2025 West Skiles Stewardship Award winners. More information and event tickets available at downtowngainesvillerotary.org.
This is Kevin Guthrie, Executive Director of the Florida Division of Emergency Management. FDEM is partnering with broadcasters statewide in rolling out Beacon, a new alerting and advisory tool to help keep Floridians safe. Download the Beacon app now by entering Beacon24/7 local alerts.
Welcome back to The Rundown. I'm Kristen Moorhead. If you've lived in Florida for a while, you may remember in 2018 when Floridians passed Amendment 4, granting people with felony convictions the right to vote. You may also remember the controversy that followed. A state law sought to take back what the amendment had tried to accomplish. This culminated in a lengthy legal battle, and in the end, the state won. Today, people with felony convictions still have a hard time voting because of the state law requirement to pay off their court fees. WLRN reporter Daniel Rivero wrote a new book on the subject and all the history behind it. It's called Just Freedom, Inside Florida's Decades-Long Voting Rights Battle. I asked him to tell me how we got here.
This book is the tale of what happened when Florida voters decided to take politics out of voting rights when it comes to people with felony convictions, and the backlash across the entirety of the state government that followed. The bulk of the story that I reported was really from the 2000 election, which was extremely troubled in the state of Florida, through 2018 with the passage of this ballot amendment and what happened a couple years after. But it is still playing out. I mean, there are still aspects of this story that are playing out, including in Alachua County. There's a handful of people who voted in the last election in Alachua that are now being investigated by the state for potentially illegally voting because the state says they didn't pay their fines and fees connected to their felonies. So it's very much still a real thing that is playing out in the real world. And, you know, I hope I'm just doing my little part to help people understand why it's happening the way that it's happening.
The book talks a lot about politics and history and legal battles. But one thing that really stood out to me was the stories of real people who are directly impacted by this series of events that happened over the course of decades. Do you have any particular stories that stand out to you from people that you spoke to over the course of reporting for this book?
One of the people that I spoke to, Betty Riddle, who lives in Sarasota, her story to me is just so fascinating. She got her first felony conviction when she was 17. She was tried as an adult. Therefore, she actually never had the right to vote in the first place. She went in and out of the prison system over the coming years, had a troubled life. But then at some point, she actually turned it all around. She got a good job. She really became someone who could be seen as a role model for her own daughter and her grandchildren, which was very important to her. Steady work. And then she was thrown into this process where she always wanted to vote, and then she got her voting rights back, and then that's where all the drama unfolds. Really, over the course of just 1 year, she gained the right to vote, lost the right to vote, gained the right to vote, lost the right to vote, and was just thrown in this hurricane situation where it was impossible to figure out what was going on. And it was very frustrating for her because she celebrated when she got her voting rights back. She says she partied like it was 1999. And it was a very short-lived party because of all the political drama that followed.
What is something that surprised you when you were doing research on this book?
You know, something that surprised me was in some way how little elected officials who really for a long time had the most to say about this, because it's all rested on politics, but how little they had to say for why they did the things that they did. As I illustrate, you know, back in the 70s, Democratic Governor Ruben Askew created a system where people would automatically get their voting rights back. And that was just a system that was in place for several decades. And then all of a sudden in the 90s, you had the Florida cabinet, which had a Democratic majority at the time. They just reversed it. And there was not really a lot of understanding or discussion about why they reversed it. It's just, we just wanted to reverse it. And as someone who practices history in some sense, like, that's a really frustrating position to be in, because you want to find the answer. Like, what precipitated this? What created it? And there's not a straightforward answer. And ultimately, one of the most surprising things to me was, you know, after the 90s, is just how much this issue tracked with the political shifts back and forth in Florida, the perceptions of, you know, what good policy is, what's the right conservative policy, you know, if you show compassion, is that liberal, is that a weakness, which is a theme that comes out in the book. And it's actually stated pretty explicitly by some of the characters. You know, they're wrestling with moral issues in some sense through the lens of partisan politics. And it doesn't always make for a clear, logical, or even explainable set of positions.
One quote that stood out to me in particular is in chapter 8. You say, given enough time, the solutions become the problems, in regards to politics and legislation. This is a major theme throughout the book that I noticed. People with good intentions and actions with good intentions having unintended consequences later on. Given that we've seen history repeat itself over and over again, what lessons can we learn from this story?
When I wrote that line, I think it was in recognition that sometimes people in positions of power try to do something for what seems like a good reason. But then, you know, you extend it out over the course of decades, and then that solution creates new problems. So then it needs to be readdressed in a different way. And the problem of politics is never done. Like, the work is never done. There's no singular theory that will solve all the problems. And I think that's something that runs counter to a lot of the ideologies, because a lot of people, if you approach problems like in a strictly ideological way, when you're confronted with the shortcomings of that ideology, it's going to be very hard to pivot. And this was a situation where, you know, there was a ballot amendment passed in 1998, which basically said, hey, taxpayers are tired of paying for the court system. We need to come up with a different way to fund the court system. And the way that came out of it was, well, we'll make the users pay for it. So the people that go through the court system, which sounds good for people that want to pay lower taxes. But then when you flash forward a couple decades, well, now it's implicated in your voting rights. So now you have a different issue. It becomes a very difficult thing to untangle.
That was WLRN reporter Daniel Rivero talking about a new book he wrote on Florida's battle over voting rights. Daniel will actually be in Gainesville on Friday at 6 p.m. for an author event at the Lynx Bookstore. If you're just joining us, this is The Rundown from WUFT News. I'm Kristen Moorhead. Coming up after the break, a smile can brighten anyone's day, so we asked UF students, what makes you smile? But first, Florida has a lot of stories to tell. Do you know your community's history? It's time for a trivia question. This Florida town was once the pencil capital of the U.S. The answer when we return.
Support from IQ Fiber, offering high-speed fiber optic internet service for homes and businesses in Alachua County. Learn how to test your current data speed and more about fiber availability in your area at IQFiber.com, a smarter internet choice.
On the next Florida Roundup, shelling, part pastime, part obsession, searching for seashells in Florida.
For me, it was very much being able to be close with nature and to stop thinking.
A documentary examines seashelling on Sanibel Island before and after Hurricane Ian. Do you bring a bucket or mesh bag with you to the beach to comb through the shells? Do you shop and buy shells? Share your story. Email radio at thefloridaroundup.org. I'm Tom Hudson. Then join us Friday noon until 1 on WUFT.
Looking for a news source that's to the point, with news that's relevant to you? Then consider WUFT's The Point. WUFT News keeps an eye on the local and state stories that impact your life. 5 days a week, we send you an email newsletter with all the top local and regional stories. From Ocala to Gainesville and everywhere else in North Central Florida. Subscribe to The Point for your most important news. The Point is made possible by the law firm of Nellinger & Associates. Sign up at WUFT.org/The Point.
Supported by the Floor Store at Thornbrook, offering a variety of flooring options, along with installation and a full-service showroom. Information at the Floor Store at thornbrook.com.
Welcome back to the Rundown from WUFT News. I'm Kristen Moorhead. As a reminder, the trivia question before the break, this Florida town was once the pencil capital of the U.S. The answer is Cedar Key. The town is named for the cedar trees that once covered the area, which made excellent material for pencils in the 1800s. Well, you know, trivia always brings a smile to my face, and a smile can brighten anyone's day. But sometimes they're hard to come by. We wanted to know about what made people smile, so we asked WUFT's Ava Simak and Sadie Johnson to head out across the University of Florida campus and ask this question. What was something that made you smile recently?
My name is Fernanda Gonzalez. Oh, well, I recently got baptized, yeah, like a week and a half ago, and I got this picture that I'm like so smiley. I'm like, yay, because I've been growing in my relationship with the Lord, and you know, everyone has their own kind of motivation, and it's been just something that was in my head, and I think I finally just told myself, you know what, like, stop leaving it for later. And that's not only for that, like, it's for everything. Like, sometimes I just keep on leaving things for later.
Yeah, my name's Ike Nakwacha. I guess I'd say the weather and just waking up, you know, every day, being able to live another day, meet new people, of course. So I'd say just waking up, the weather. Honestly, I like colder weather because it was like kind of chillier like this morning, like the past few weeks. So I'm looking forward to fall.
My name's Sam Bullard. I just like met up with a friend that I hadn't seen in like a couple of years. I was abroad for a year, so I hadn't seen her in like a long time, but I just went to like lunch with her and it was a fun time. Actually, like, I met her on study abroad, and I didn't know that we had, like, gone to the same high school. Like, we're both from Gainesville, but I didn't know until, I met her there that we had gone to the same high school, so.
Okay, my name is Danielle Bassos. I've been getting a lot of compliments on my hair recently because I've been doing it differently, and it's just been making me feel good. It's nice to know because I think it looks nice, so.
My name is Carlos Amario. Something that made me smile would be going to my Portuguese class and just getting to talk in Portuguese with some of my peers. Learning about what they did over the weekend and just engaging with the class, pretty much.
Those responses from UF students on what made them smile recently. It was produced by WUFT's Ava Simak and Sadie Johnson. We hope that segment brought you a smile. The Rundown is a production of WUFT News out of the University of Florida College of Journalism and Communications. I'm Kristen Moorhead. The team that made this show possible this week includes Dave Bereswain, Dana Hill, Kira Carl, Ava Simak, and Sadie Johnson. Special thanks to the Dean of the College, Hub Brown, and Interim News Director, Ethan Majok. Do you have comments or questions about the show today, or ideas for future shows? Email us at therundown@wuft.org. That's it for the Rundown. I'm Kristen Moorhead.